Feedback Transportation Committee meeting. This is a revised agenda of Monday, August 25th, 2025. That's 11 a.m. And go ahead and call this meeting to order. And I'm going to ask the clerk for the roll call.
Awakalinka Band of Korean Indians.
Here.
City of Blythe.
Here.
City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Coachella.
Here.
City of Desert Hot Springs.
Present.
City of Indian Wells. City of Indio. City of La Quinta.
Here.
City of Palm Desert.
Here.
City of Palm Springs.
Here.
City of Rancho Mirage.
Here.
County of Riverside.
Here.
Torres Martinez, Desert Cahuilla Indians. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. I'm going to ask my friend, a colleague, a professor from City of Palm Springs to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Professor.
El profesor.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we'll move on now to public comments on agenda items.
Okay, we've received none. Anybody online? No hands raised either, none.
We'll move on to Chair Executive Director's announcement. Executive Director.
Yeah, I've got a couple of things to comment on. One, just related to the agenda itself, with your approval and consent from the rest, we'd like to move a couple of items around just to make sure we had a quorum on all action items. We'd like to move item 7B, which is a presentation, to the end of the discussion action agenda. And we'd like to move item 7E, designation of 2026 State Transportation Improvement Funds, to right after item 7A.
I'm sorry, what was the first one that you moved?
7B to the after 7G.
One to the end.
And 7E to after 7A.
That's so tough. Thank you very much.
So with your approval,
is there a motion to approve or modify the agenda? Do I have to make a motion?
Yes.
So moved.
Second.
There's a second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And I'm sure Joey has his thumbs up there.
Joey?
Aye.
All right. Agenda's been modified.
And Chair, just another couple of quick notes. One, obviously we're in a new meeting location. That's after I spent the last 2 months of the fiscal year explaining how we were moving to a different location.
That's right.
We thought we were going to be moving across the parking lot at CVAG or City of Palm Desert into the Regional Water Quality Control Board. They were fantastic to work with until we talked to Sacramento, and then it became very complex and difficult for
stop
us to move.
Oh, stop. Time. Never happened.
Not stop.
You're surprised by this.
Yeah.
So rather than deal with that bureaucracy, we reached out to our friends here at CBWD, and they've been fantastic to work with. So we thank Jim and the team here for accommodating us. And we'll be using this facility probably all year long and maybe even longer, depending on the construction of the new library at City of Palm Desert.
Thank you, CBWD.
Yeah. The other little update is we spent a lot of time here rightfully complaining about how we get so little in state and federal funding. And we have some good news to report, small dollar news, but still good news. Both the City of Cathedral City and CBAG and the City of Moreno Valley received some congestion related or sustainable transportation planning funds. CBAG is going to receive about $600,000. And see, so, actually, Coachella received some too, didn't they, Randy? Is that right? Yeah. Coachella got $300,000 and Cathedral City, $200,000, CVAG, $600,000. And ours will be used to further explore improvements along the freeway and highway system. And we get very little money to do that these days through the state. So we're appreciative of that. And we'll certainly see agendized items related to that in the future. With that, Chair, that's the extent of my report.
Right, very good. We'll move on now to the consent calendar. It's recommended that we take these items simultaneously. What are the wishes of the committee?
Move approval as presented.
Second.
There's a motion. There is a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Mm-hmm. All right. We do have a special guest, I guess, here. Is there a presentation, Tom?
Jonathan, are we all set for this?
Item number 7A.
And as a reminder, while we connect with the state, we have microphones in the ceiling, and so it seems like our sound quality is very good. Just note that if you're going to whisper to somebody next to you, not just the somebody next to you might hear that you're whispering. So with that, you've been warned.
Chair, for the record, I would like to note the City of Indio has arrived.
Welcome, City of Indio.
Hey, just to start the meeting, I would like to introduce you to Rachel Carpenter from CalSTA, and she's going to introduce this item, and then I have some slides to go over with you to finish off the item.
Morning.
Morning.
My name is, let's see, should I go ahead and start?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, perfect. And you can hear me. The audio is coming through clear?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for having me today. As Jonathan mentioned, my name is Rachel Carpenter. My permanent role is with Caltrans as the department's chief safety officer. And I'm currently on an assignment with CalSTA, that's the State Transportation Agency, which is our cabinet level, our state's cabinet level transportation organization that includes departments like Caltrans, CHP, DMV, Office of Traffic Safety, and a couple other. So the purpose of this assignment that I'm on with CalSTA is to stand up a new state priority safety corridor program. And I know I only have 10 minutes with you today to give an overview of this effort, so I want to just jump right in. As you may know, every year, thousands of Californians are killed or seriously injured in traffic crashes in our state. And they're often occurring on the same corridors that have seen these tragedies in the past. We really do believe that these aren't isolated incidents, that they reflect patterns in our transportation system. So the idea of a state priority safety corridor effort is to unite various partners, including CalSTA departments, to bring their respective toolboxes to one stretch of road, showing the power of a coordinated, all-hands approach to improving safety. So for the first time, it's really exciting because the state is screening the entire transportation network and determining where our road safety challenges are the greatest. So CalSTA has partnered with UC Berkeley, their Safe Transportation Education Center, or SafeTrec, to identify corridors across California where fatal and serious injuries are the most concentrated. And by identifying these high-risk segments, we aim to prioritize places where investment can make the biggest difference. So we are looking at three types of roads. Those are freeways, expressways, arterials, and collectors. And when we screened the state, we found that many of these corridors are actually on locally owned roads. And while the state doesn't directly control them, we're coming to the local agencies offering to help. So enter Varner Road. I'm going to try, let's see, I'm not sure if I have screen sharing. Looks like I have screen sharing capability. So I'm going to try this. Can someone give me a thumbs up that they can?
We do see it.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So what I'm sharing here is one of the locations of Varner Road that came up in our work with UC Berkeley. You can see the other three that are going to be the focus of our first round of this program, which I'll get to in a minute, are shown here. So you can see Varner Road, a stretch that I'm sure you are familiar with. I'll just zoom out a bit. This segment also does appear on Skaggs Regional High Injury Network. sort of confirming that our data analysis worked. And what you see is a variety of yellow and red dots. And what those indicate are fatal and serious injuries. So there's 10 serious injuries just in this stretch over the last 5 years. And there are three fatalities. I'm going to stop sharing now. And get back to, let's see. Are you still seeing the screen?
We can see you.
Okay, perfect. Wonderful. So progress, we want to work with you to help you improve safety on this road. So progress depends obviously on your acceptance of our help. And so we're here today hoping for that acceptance. So nearly two-thirds of all fatal and serious injury crashes in California happen off the state highway system. So those are the roads that Caltrans owns and operates. And our new state priority safety corridor effort really acknowledges this reality and steps us up as a partner to local agencies across the state. So we are hoping that this program shows real leadership looks like. We're not drawing jurisdictional lines by working. You know, we're trying to work across governments and departments just to save lives because it is our top priority at CalSTA. So the state priority safety corridor effort allows the state to embrace sort of a coordinated strategy with other entities, including local agencies, to deliver real safety improvements. So what does this mean for you? We have identified the Varner stretch that I showed earlier, and we are coming to you with a menu of options to work to improve that stretch. So I'm going to go through a couple of those, not an inclusive list, but we're wanting to give you just a little flavor for what we can provide. So CHP is one of our departments, and from a law enforcement perspective, I do understand that they can work this entire road with proper notification to Cathedral City. So our patrol, our Indio CHP personnel are contacting Cathedral City Police Department. So we want to step up some sort of enforcement on this stretch. So whether that's additional targeted enforcement with additional officers present, or it could be training. So patrol come in to do training on maybe it's street racing, sideshows, based on the data, what the issue has been. A variety, it could be bike rodeos, for example, targeted at communities along this corridor, or education. So partnering at public events, potentially we want to hold, maybe it's an event on car seat safety every 15 minutes for schools in the area. We are, those are some of the options that the patrol can offer. Office of Traffic Safety can provide educational program support, social media informational toolkits for you, road safety educational materials for local, specific local agencies on the stretch, because I do understand that there's going to be a couple of different groups that provide service to this stretch. Public Office of Traffic Safety is willing to stand up a public awareness campaign specifically at this stretch. And so those are just a couple of examples. We have identified up to 13 million dollars through Caltrans state funds to be able to provide to you on this stretch for safety improvements. I do understand that you have an existing project on this stretch and looking to introduce safety countermeasures in coordination with the existing project that I think Jonathan or other staff can go into more. So we are here today hoping that, you know, I'm here to answer any questions, but wanting to partner with you to figure out how to improve safety on Varner Road. So I'll pause there and I'll turn it back to you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Rachel. I wanted to share a few slides and let the committee know about the project we've already been working on Varner. It's this timing works out very well. We, back in 2024, CVAG started work on Varner Road. As soon as this thing warms up, I can flip the slide. We started work on Varner Road. We hired a consultant to help us with, thank you, Kevin, to help us with improving Varner along the freeway. So about a 22-mile stretch. And what we're doing there is the CV Sync Phase 3, so coordinating the signals. We were also looking at Varner Road because it functions as a de facto I-10 bypass when there's incidents on the freeway. So we're looking at intersection improvements, turn pockets, widening intersections, doing other work. We also, as part of CV Sync, were working on an integrated corridor management plan with Caltrans. So the timing on this is perfect because we're able to take the accident data that's provided by the state. We've shared this with the County of Riverside traffic engineer, the transportation director, and Mr. Acuna has shared it with his transportation team. And we've already started looking at what this data means and what countermeasures we can apply. We'd love to partner with Caltrans and put together a scope of work that could be then used to amend our project scope and add in those safety countermeasures. This is what that road looks like. This particular picture was when the freeway was shut down during Hillary because it flooded. But this is a very busy street, frontage road. And the recommendation from staff is to authorize the executive director to coordinate with the state, expediting the improvements, make the changes to our existing contracts, and work together to improve safety along Varner Road, especially in this area.
Supervisor Perez.
Thank you. There. Well, thanks for the presentation, Jonathan. I know you've been working on this for a while. And I also want to thank Rachel for calling in. Appreciate the efforts. And, you know, I think there's so many different ways in which we can discuss this, but I think that we've all gotten stuck on the I-10 at one time or another, coming home or trying to get out of the valley to go somewhere, especially during the festivals. It's happened to me at least a few times. And obviously it doesn't feel good. If you get angry, you're frustrated, you just feel like something needs to get done. And I think this is timely, as you mentioned, Jonathan, and rightly so. Another factor is going to be linked to the CV Link. Or CV Sync, rather. I think that's going to be important, and DHS plays a role in all that, and so does Cathedral City. You know, I find it amazing that this was identified as top five safety corridors in California. That is, wow, I never thought of it in that way. You know, growing up here, I never really heard of all the different accidents that took place, or the fatalities, but they actually are occurring. And, you know, can you imagine the road rage that potentially happens when people are stuck? I think that actually plays a role in some of this, too. And so the fact that we're going to be working on targeted efforts, infrastructure, look, street racing, for whatever reason, is back and big time. Even from my house in Coachella, I hear like at 4 in the morning, people racing is loud. And I know it's happening everywhere, especially in unincorporated areas and especially in long corridors like potentially this one here. So the fact that we're going to have some sort of effort between Cathedral City, Palm Springs, CHP, I think is going to be very, very helpful. The education is going to be necessary, and we'll try to put a stop to that. So ultimately, at the end of the day, the county is involved. We're very happy to be engaged. will continue. Dennis will be leading the charge on behalf of the county, Juan and others. You know, I find it interesting, though. I never thought of Byron Road as a bypass corridor. It was just always been there. But it's become a corridor. It's become a bypass. And so now we got to do what we can to improve it, you know, to ensure that there's better, more safety measures, and definitely the County of Riverside will be engaged in that. So once again, thank you for calling in from Sacramento. You're always welcome to come down, although I wouldn't recommend you coming down at this time because it's pretty hot. But nonetheless, so we'll welcome you with open arms. And hopefully, you know, when we get these funds and we do groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings and all that, someone from your agency will be
here. City of Palm Desert.
Thank you. I think this is great. We're talking about coordinated efforts and support, and we know we need it because this is a big issue. I just have a quick question. When we look at all those fatalities and serious injuries, are we able to identify what the primary cause? Is it excessive speed? Do we know that?
Yes, we'll look into the data on each accident. Has a detailed report that will say what the fault was or what the conflict was, and we can figure out what countermeasures are appropriate for what type of accident.
Thank you. Thank you for the report from Sacramento, and thank you for the report from Palm Desert.
City of Cathedral City.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you so much for identifying this and bringing it forward. On your map, you have the green line, and it starts and it ends where there were incidents. But we know that the solutions are probably going to extend beyond those limits. So is the proposal from the state to assist just within the area of that green line, or will you actually be looking at the corridor as a whole, at least to some extent, extending beyond that?
I can take that. So a lot of the effort that we're doing in this year is sort of proof of concept. So we are trying to determine if this new model of improving safety is going to work. For this first round, we will be limited to the segment that was identified on the map. What we hope is that this is a incredibly successful effort, and then we can look at potentially screening in a different way, to acknowledge, you know, the good point you just brought up. So we know that if the cross section doesn't change on a roadway like Barner, and a couple of miles on either side looks exactly the same, then we could likely have fatal and serious injury crashes. But because this is just a proof, and we want to make sure that we're using funds, in the locations that would benefit the most, we're trying to show this is effective, and then, you know, in future years, hopefully be able to look beyond sort of these very rigid segments that have been identified for the first round.
Well, I appreciate that. We've all seen projects where there were improvements in a segment, and that helped the segment, but then it pushed the issues down without addressing the issue in a more holistic way. So I'm hoping that the state will consider that. And if not the state, that when CBAG does their examination of this, that they'll also be looking at the whole segment, not necessarily just the limits of the green line.
Maybe that's the question we asked John, is that what can we do to add on so that we can...
And I might be able to provide a little insight. We're doing a 22-mile-long corridor study right now. So in some ways, we started with the holistic, and the state is adding resources to focus additionally on safety countermeasures in one area. I think it's fair to say, isn't it, Jonathan, that if there are going to be countermeasures that work along this segment, that we might apply them up and down that segment. Mm-hmm. And that should be part of the scope of work, and you will see that in the future.
Thank you.
Well, I think anytime we can get other people's monies to our area, I'm all for it. The other thing too is that I know there's a lot of people that like to go get hamburgers in that course. And so it's going to make it a little bit safer for them too. And so I'm excited about that.
Is this, you know, I see this, and I see this at the Indio side, right? It's speeding. Whenever you have a clear road, and so the downside to us paving everything is that cars can just fly down the street. It's easier, right? And so I'm wondering how much of this is speeding, because that's where I cringe. I just see cars flying 80 miles an hour, and I absolutely cringe. And then you have that segment that you showed me where it's totally blacked up because, right, that's where people stop to get burgers on the way from point A to point B. I mean, I guess I see two problems. I see the speeding and then and really erratic, horrible driving and then screeching to a halt in that area and the challenges of people zigging and zagging to try to get to their point and causing some major issues, especially with the trucks. I mean, that is... Yeah, I remember, Supervisor. I've only been here 20 years, or 20 years ago. You could drive without most of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to find out what the problem is. So it's exciting, you know, that we're going to collaborate with the state. And I will encourage the state because it's my job. We have other areas of need, too. So if there's any more money you want to give us, we'll take it. So I'm looking for a motion to approve this if there are no other questions.
So moved.
Second. And a second. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
City of Blythe. Joey. Got an aye?
Aye. Yep.
All right. Motion carries. Item carries. We'll move on now to item number E. This is the designation of 2026 State Transportation Improvement Program Funds.
Aye. Thank you. Good morning again, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. This item is the designation of the 2026 STIP funds. The STIP program is a five-year program where state puts a five-year budget together, and they do this in two-year cycles. So every 2 years, we get a fund estimate that will be released from CTC. And once they release this fund estimate, the county gets their share. Right now, the fund estimate for Riverside County is around $31 million. So then it goes into the distribution formula that we have agreed with in an MOU with RCTC for the county, and it's split up based on the region. Project management and programming, planning money up to 5% is taken off that dollar amount, and then the remainder is for programming. So if we look at the three regions, you can see the percentages and how much we have to program for this next two-year cycle within the Coachella Valley. So normally this money is programmed to big or large regional projects. There's a lot of state and federal requirements that come with this money. In the past, it's gone to interchanges such as Jefferson, Monroe Street. We've also used it on large regional projects like CV Sync, CV Link, CV Rail. So moving forward, what staff is coming to you with a recommendation is to use it to complete our CV Sync program. As you're all familiar, we've completed phase one. We're in the process of completing phase two by spring. Phase three, we just talked about that with the corridor on Varner. And phase four is the area in Rancho Mirage. So being able to complete the CV Sync with those regional corridors in Rancho Mirage is a big deal because the system will be not only enhancing connecting all those regional corridors, it'll improve the system performance, it'll reduce costs, and it would just complete the whole system in the Coachella Valley. So, and the program years for this funding is 29, 30, 30, 31. So it's actually too far out to even use for Monroe Street, for example, because the project will be done already or we have other funding at risk. So this timing just makes sense. So that's our recommendation to the committee. The program, approximately $6 million of the STIP money for the 2026 funding to CV Sync Phase 4 in Rancho Mirage.
City of Palm Desert.
Thank you. Thank you for this. And those of us that serve on budget and implementation, RCTC, we just left that meeting. So we're aware of the division of these funds. And I do think it's important for us all to note that the trend of percentage of the funds coming to Coachella Valley is not good. Mm-hmm. And it is going down significantly. Every year we get less and less and less. Fewer dollars come to us. So I just want to make that note because it's important for us to pay attention to that.
Absolutely. I just add to that, 2 years ago it was $60 million. And this year it's $30 million. So it's cut in half.
Yeah. And it's the percentage, and we're looking at gas tax revenue and all these things that are diminishing, and then we get a smaller percentage of the diminishing funds.
I want to just take a moment and acknowledge the leadership out of Rancho Mirage for joining us in this CV sync and making sure that not only our residents but our tourists that come and visit here have a great experience. And I know, Ted, you've been working on that, and it feels pretty amazing to see you and your leadership and bringing the region together. So I just want to commend you for this, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you know, it's a team effort, and staff plays a critical role in making that work. So I appreciate the kind comments. Thanks.
Is that a motion?
Make motion.
Motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The City of Blythe.
Aye.
There's no notes. Thank you. Motion passes. We'll move on now to item number C. This is a contract amendment for CV Sync Phase 2 construction management.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, members of the Transportation Committee. I'm Mark Lancaster. I am an Assistant Director of Transportation for CVAG, and I bring forth an item this morning to amend the construction management contract with TKE Engineering for the CV Sync Phase 2 project. I actually like the other graphic from Jonathan's presentation better, but this is the overall project. The Phase 1 of CV Sync is in blue. Phase 2 is in purple, or I'm sorry, not actually purple, more like pink. Phase 3 is kind of in a orangish, tannish color. And Phase 4 will be future projects. Rancho Mirage is now taking CV Sync Phase 4, so everything in green will be done in future CV Sync phases. So I want to kind of go through where we are with the construction management contract. The original contract back in December of 2020 was for Phase 1 project, about $3.6 million that the Executive Transportation Committee's Transportation Committee recommended. Executive Committee agreed to award the contract to TKE Engineering for the CV Sync Phase 1 project. That project finished about June of 2024, last year, and we're moved on, of course, to CV Sync Phase 2. The original contract for Phase 2 was for about less than $7.5 million, and that was to administer all the corridors that will bring the total number of signals in the CV Sync network up to approximately 500. This is, by the way, the largest project of its kind in the nation that I'm aware of, and it is truly an ambitious project. Back in April of this year, the staff brought an item to amend that contract with TKE for $2.1 million. At the time, we had a belief that it was going to be enough to carry us through the end of the contract, which will be about a year from now. By the time we close out all the paperwork, it'll probably be about September 2026. The actual physical construction of the work will end probably December of this year. We're really getting close to the end of that. And then all of the integration of all of the cables and fiber and every component at every intersection will be integrated, and that will take about a six-month period. So when we came to you in April with a $2.1 million amendment, we believed that was going to be enough to carry us through the contract, but there's been numerous changes, additional work, utility coordination with both IID, Southern California Edison, a lot of things that cause a lot more inspection work, a lot more field work than was originally anticipated. So today, staff is recommending that we amend TKE's contract one more time for $1.65 million, bringing the total contract for phase one and phase two up to about $14.828 million. This work is, again, there's been some physical things that have happened, errant vehicles hitting equipment on the road. Just recently, within the last month, there was a paving project that actually severed the fiber in one location. So there's been a lot more inspection work to make sure that all of that gets incorporated into the project and everything works as planned.
All right. Any questions?
Just real quick, the breakdown of the $1.6 million is on the screen, $1.65 million, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
A long time to make.
Yeah, I mean, this is Coachella Valley-wide system integration. Yes. And the one, I think, exciting thing that I like is that it's learning, you know, as we go. So we know we're not perfect yet. We'll never get there, I think. But the system is learning, and we got good data feedback. And so
I think the project is working well. It's not perfect, but we're making adjustments as we can. And as we see problems, people are calling in with issues from the cities, the public once in a while, very rarely. But we adjust and we make sure that we look at those situations very carefully.
How often do you, Mark, sit down and...
You know, that would be probably counterproductive. So I'm just trying to make sure that the construction, everything gets complete. Chris Gunderson, who's with me here today, he is the brains behind the operation.
I didn't trust anything.
They set me up a little play one on my desk. I'm kidding. But no, it's better that the experts that know that system deal with that. And Chris and his team are great with that.
Thank you. Any questions, City of Palm Springs?
Yeah, and it's more of a question of exploring information. Because as a policy matter, I'm just curious if you've had problems. I mean, this is a great initiative, but I'm curious if you've had problems with different jurisdictions. So, for example, there's an intersection, as we've all known, there's the protected permissive and there's the permissive, where, you know, you can't turn left and some you can when there's no oncoming traffic. In Palm Springs, for example, over the last couple of years, they've moved more towards too restrictive, too protected, in my opinion. And I'm looking at it needs to be less restrictive. I'm just curious how that affects your synchronization going from jurisdiction to jurisdiction with different. And is there something that we can do in cities as a policy level that might help you when you implement this for a better system? I'm just curious if you've run into that issue.
I'll try to answer the last part first. The participation agreement that now every city in the Coachella Valley has signed has kind of given us the right tools to implement the CVSync network. As far as kind of adjusting signal timing, you know, it really depends if it's just one intersection or a series of intersections. It's a lot, I think, easier and better to try to do a series of them. If you try to just do one, you sometimes, you know, you cause more problems than what you anticipated. So we look at every city's request and we do make timing changes, see how those work and implement. But it's truly the cities that still have the authority. They have a registered traffic engineer who signs off on all of these timing sheets. And those are implemented, and that's how the signal controllers are coordinated.
Well, but to a finer point on that is, would it be helpful for you implementing a better timing scheme if you'd had less restrictive intersections from jurisdictions? I mean, if we made some policy change that actually allowed you to do better timing.
I'd like to revisit that. Okay. Only because we're not quite integrated yet with all the signals functioning and everything working through our regional traffic management system or our center. And one of the things, again, we work with all the cities as they bring up issues and as issues arise. But I'd like to look at once we get the system working And we could actually work with the cities on particular corridors or particular intersections that they have had issues with.
Because I think the goal is obviously a smoother people ride more efficiently. And when we put too many restrictions on this, it kind of messes up that. It gets too complicated. So as you move through this, if you could maybe let us know if there's something we can do in our jurisdictions that might be helpful to you.
And maybe we want to look at a regional standard. I mean, if that's
the same, at least on those corridors.
On those corridors of how,
And we do, depending on the speed, the number of lanes, there's a lot of factors that go into determining what is the right timing. The timing on Highway 111 is going to probably be different than, say, Varner Road or Fred Waring, something like that. You know, and north-south corridors coming from the freeway, whether they touch a freeway or not, also make a difference.
From Sochella, 80 miles an hour all the way.
Well, then we have our safety issue that we're trying to avoid as well. So there's a balance. I guess my point is there's a balance. And I think we're striking that balance across most of the valley, and we intend to do so as we get more and more signals integrated in.
And council member, I might suggest reframing your suggestion. We're going to have the tools everywhere now to certainly set up timing plans. But ultimately, we don't want to do that. If you're in the left turn pocket, nobody's coming, you should be able to make a left turn.
Exactly. That's the point. That's the point I'm making.
Absolutely. We're going to have so much out there, and vehicles are going to be connected, but we have to walk before we run.
Understood.
And so I just asked for a little bit of patience. I mean, we've been working with each of the cities where there are issues. We work on that intersection, make sure that your constituents address their needs. But we're going to have a system that's going to be smarter than we are very soon.
Speak for yourself.
It's easy. It's a low bar.
We have a good conversation. What are the wishes of the committee?
Approval, Cathedral City.
Is there a motion? There's a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Joey?
Yes.
No abstentions? Seeing none, motion carries. Move on now to CV Link extension to Desert Hot Springs, Julie.
Excuse me. I apologize, Chair, to everyone. I had a previously 12 o'clock meeting, so I'm going to have to escape. It was nice seeing everyone for the short duration. Thank you.
Great meeting.
Good morning, Chairman and committee members. Julie Mignona, Transportation Program Manager at CVAG, and here to present awarding a contract for the CV Link extension to Desert Hot Springs, really is the connector to the CV Link extension to Desert Hot Springs. The project location, project location here, we are looking to award a contract to provide alternative analysis and conceptual planning, connecting the existing CV Link across the interchange, the I-10, and providing a foundational document for future projects, and then informing funding. So we want to use this document to receive future funding. So you can see here where we are trying to connect to the existing CV Link near Palm Springs and 111 all the way across to what is currently existing and being constructed in Desert Hot Springs. So how do we get across the interchange there? We are looking at four different alternatives. So our consultant will do some analysis and we'll figure out which is the most appropriate configuration. We received four requests for proposals. The City of Desert Hot Springs and CVAG staff are recommending Dawkin Engineering receive a contract not to exceed $130,000 to conduct the alternative analysis, conceptual planning, and provide grant application support for the CV Link Desert Hot Springs Extension Connection Project, so connecting to the CV Link in Desert Hot Springs. Any questions?
Yes, sir. Quick comment. Thank you. Our staff is fully supportive of this. They've been in the process. I want to thank CVAG for working with us on this. This has been something I've been talking to Tom for many years. We actually were awarded at one time $20 million, but it got axed by the state legislature. So it was a sad moment for all of us. I've always been a bigger advocate for the Indian Canyon, especially with the work we're going to be doing soon. So I think this is a great opportunity to look at that rather than the Palm Drive corridor. Travel both those corridors quite a bit, and the Indian Canyon seems more, have better views, seem to be maybe safer, and with the road improvements we'll be doing, I think it could connect a lot easier. So I'm excited about this.
I think this speaks to our commitment to connect.
Yes.
And it's been a long time coming, and we've done a lot of segments, and I know we've done some improvements out in DHS as well, but now we're going to connect one valley, one part of the valley with the rest. So.
It's a theme today.
Yeah, connection. Right. All right. So there is was that a motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
There's a motion, a second. All those in favor, signify by saying
aye.
Aye. Joey?
Yes.
All right. Any no's, abstentions? Motion carries. We'll now have a robust conversation on the designation of the the cash flow analysis for the regional transit projects.
Hello again. Now for the easy items. So back in 2020, staff prepared a cash flow analysis for the committees. We identified some upcoming shortfalls. At the time, revenues were down in both Measure A, TOMP, STIP was going down. And we also had the COVID pandemic that was just started back in 2020. We took this analysis to both committees. We had some discussions about them. After discussing various policy alternatives, both short-term and long-term, we were advised by the committees to move forward, but to monitor. So monitor the cash flow. Let's see what's happening with cash flow as we continue. Also at the time, there's a new administration coming in, and we wanted to see what would happen as far as an infrastructure bill. And so let's see what's happening as far as new funding at the federal and state level. And then in the meantime, let's move forward on pre-construction type of funding and get projects shovel ready so they could be ready to compete if you had other funding streams come available. So, and we did. 2021, we'd had the infrastructure bill approved. That added significant funding to various programs, both at federal and the state level. And a lot of that funding, although it went into programs, it also went in formula funds directly to the state. So the state was able to inflate a lot of their programs, like DACA transportation, for example, and provide more projects to build. So CBAG pursued those very aggressively. We submitted an active transportation Cycle 6 application, and we were awarded the second highest award in the state of California for the Arts and Music line. We also competed for a new program that the state was able to fund with some of that federal dollars, and we were tied first and received the maximum award of $50 million for the Indian Canyon Access Project in Palm Springs. We also, the executive director initiated talks with RCTC. We have a longstanding relationship, a partnership with them to equitably divide funds with Coachella Valley and Western Riverside County. And we re-examined and reconciled funding that's come to Riverside County. Went back a decade, just went through the whole programs that we had. And we were able to identify funding that should have gone to Coachella Valley. $26 million in federal surface transportation block grant money that was due to come to the Coachella Valley. Another $14 million and a new SB1 funding source, which was a local partnership program, the formula share of that. We identified that should come to the Coachella Valley. We actually executed an MOU that the committee approved. These two funding streams were then programmed to Monroe Interchange. So we have that money programmed to this project. And in our discussions, we also were able to identify funding at risk, congestion mitigation, air quality. So CMAQ funding used to come through the feds to the state, to the county, and we'd get our Salton Sea Basin share and we'd program it. And that money to be programmed was about $50 million. But we understood that a new program was going to happen where that money had to go to SCAG and the whole region would compete for it. So we're able to program that $50 million for CV Sync Phase 2, and we're able to lock it in, and we've been using that money to build that. So even though we had these successes, at the same time, something else was going on. And you can see the rate of construction costs going up. And then in 2020, you had COVID, and you can see a sharp rate change there. And construction costs are going up and affecting everyone, not just EVAC. And as an example of that, since Ms. Holmes left, I'll pick on Monroe Interchange. We have an example of what's happening there. So when you, just broadly speaking, when money comes in from the state or the Fed, that comes first out of the project, and the remainder is shared. And right now, the cost share formula we use is 75-25, where CVAC's taking the 75% and the local pays 25%. So you look how that plays out with Monroe Interchange. Back in 2020, when we did this ESTA cash flow, it was around $90 million. But in 5 years, it's about tripled the amount of local and CVAC share that we're having to put forward towards that particular interchange, just the one. So this not only affects Indio, though, and CVAC, but it also affects the other cities. And if those of you have been around a while might know, remember this, but in this has been around since 2003. There was a proportionate share policy developed for Indian Canyon, Palm, APOM, Bob Hope, Jefferson. And it was the way that worked. We'll look at Jefferson as an example, is there was a trip generation, a traffic study done. And the cost of the interchange was then divided out amongst the local agencies based on use. So where was that traffic coming from? So that 25% share that would be local agency was then split further to share in the cost of a large infrastructure like an interchange. For example, Palm Springs for Jefferson Street, Palm Springs paid $1.4 million of that local share. And so everyone contributed to that. Now, when you in your staff report, there's a little table that we included that showed you the local shares for Jefferson. And we just, as an exercise, compared that, threw in the cost of Monroe and used those same shares just to illustrate how that could be divided. But a more specific study will be done for Monroe to find out exactly what the fair share analysis would be. But just taking a broader look at the interchanges that we just talked about, back when we did these interchanges, and there's also some improvements on Monroe, so it went from 5 to 6 on the map here, 78% of the cost of these interchanges was outside funding, state and federal funding. And I think the total local funding amount that we needed was somewhere around close to $60 million for just one. For all six of these. That's all that the local share was, CVAC and local share. So if you look at what we're planning to do, though, for the next 8 interchanges, we have secured 6% federal outside funding for these, and it's about $1 billion share to get all of these interchanges done. Staff has updated this cash flow analysis, and we are seeing a future negative balance in a few years. This is only looking at the obligated projects. So if you look at the budget that was just approved, if you look at the projects that were in there, where we have executed agreements, includes Monroe Street. This is what we're looking like. Does not include any new projects that we need to add or any new phases of projects that need to be approved to complete what we've started. So that's what we'd like to make you aware of today and talk about some of the options and things we've been thinking about. When you're looking about cash flow, you have definitely, revenue and expenditures to balance. The revenue from CVAG comes formula of share. Measure A is about $24 million is what we're getting. HUMF, we're seeing about a $7 million a year. And STIP, as we just talked about on the previous item, if you make that an annual amount, is around $3 million. This is our normal money that we get outside of competing for it that we get to program. And this is something we pointed out before, but we want to just revisit it. It's back when SB1 was approved, the regular gas tax money that cities and the county received about doubled. So that money goes directly to cities and counties, and CVAC doesn't receive any of that. So that's another point to make, that where CVAC's not getting money to move forward, to move projects forward for new improvements. So facing that reality, what do we do? If we're unable to build any other projects, How do we look at cash flow? What are some of the options that we have, whether it be taxes, prioritization, cost sharing, fees, and what are our next steps? And we'd like to review some of those with you. Some of these are similar to what we talked about in 2020. We'd like to revisit those here. So the funding share I just spoke to you about, the 75-25 that we see here today wasn't always 75-25. It used to be 50-50 up until 2007 when that changed. One option, I'm just going to go through different options today just to get your feedback, but is to go back to the 50-50 formula. That's one thing that could happen to free up more cash flow on the revenue side for CVAC program. Also looking at new development, TUMF. Currently, our TUMF fee for a new single-family house is $2,840. It's important to note back in 2018 when the TUMF Nexus study was approved, the maximum amount it was recommended was $8,400 per house. The committee at the time looked at the impact to development and also looked at how what was the realistic outlook of all those Nexus study projects getting done in this in the near term. And so it was reduced to, I think, $2,300. And over time, it's just had a cost of living kind of adjustment. So right now it's $2,840. Right now, WRCOG has a $15,000 per single family home. We're in the process right now of updating the TPPS, which will include a TUMF Nexus study. And then the committee will be facing this again about setting the TUMF fee for single family development. So an option is to, based on the new Nexus analysis for the TUMF, perhaps increasing that fee. Another thing would be looking at taxes. Right now we get a half cent sales tax from the Measure A. I know RCTC has discussed this for some time, considering in their traffic relief plan of looking at a new measure. That's something they've talked about a while. I think we'll find out more information as that plan gets developed. Maybe this is something that Coachella Valley needs to look at as well, of about increasing a sales tax for infrastructure in Coachella Valley. On the expenditure side, the way we go through and fund phases of projects where it's planning and design, right-of-way and construction is we have different agreements. So as the project moves forward, we amend it, we add more funding, and we finally get to construction. With the key point is right before construction, we call that shovel ready. We could look at both things. We could look at continuing just fund pre-construction or just fund construction and look at options there. We can talk about putting a spending limit on projects. Does any project get a cap? Only one project has a cap for a single project that we need to consider. And we can also look at maybe these interchanges that are $1 billion. Maybe we don't do interchanges anymore. Something else on the table. So CBAG is facing these projected deficits in the next couple of years. As we just talked about, costs are rising. And there's difficult options to consider. We're seeking the committee's input today, but we're also, the recommendation is to direct the executive director to further investigate and analyze policy changes, both short-term, long-term, and then bring back recommendations to the committee to further discuss.
All right. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. So a few years ago when I became the chairman, I think we had the presentation and we saw just the impact of what Measure A or lack of Measure A or renewal Measure A was going to do. And we've seen kind of the increases, and I want to thank staff and acknowledge your guys' work, because we went after other people's monies. And the first part of your presentation was acknowledging, you know, over the course of the last 3-4 years, how much money we brought into the region. And so I think that strategy is one that we need to keep. You know, going after state, federal dollars and competing. I love the way that this agency competes. And, you know, we've gone, you know, CV Sync, CV Link, Monroe, you know, you went and looked at formulas. I don't know how often we can do that, but you let RCTC know that that we were not getting our fair share. And we made some progress, but that ability to compete and relook at things is something that we need to keep on the table. I will say that I think the taxation issue, not just a CVAG issue, it's a Riverside County as a whole issue, RCTC. And we've, for whatever reasons, have made our own decisions here not to pursue a local Measure A increase when we've had great polling. We said, hey, we'll go forward with RCTC, and it's really the West County that couldn't get their act together. And if we got to go at it alone, I'm still of the opinion that our region is one that is supportive, because I remember those conversations with Ann Mayer. And I think if we were to address that, it would have been a little bit of a different picture. But I think just throwing that out there, I get it. Sometimes we want to do things as a county, as a whole, but if there's support to move things forward here, why stop our progress because they can't get their progress or their act together on the other side? Just throwing that out there, food for thought. I know you guys that sit on RCTC may think differently, but I don't anymore. And I'm thinking very parochially about the Coachella Valley, how to get us some money.
So a couple of things. First of all, I appreciate the analysis. This is, you need to do this. This is fair. I know in all our jurisdictions, we do similar analysis. A lot of it's on roadways because that's a big concern in all of our jurisdictions, although we may have other public works projects, but roads take over the majority of it. So of course, when I see the mention, and it is a fair mention, about the SB1 tax, the gas tax, that went to the cities and it increased the amount of money. You just have to be fair, though, and point out that the jurisdictions are using that for their local roads, which are in big trouble. I'll speak for my own city, but I think many are in the same area. There are some cities that are blessed with having more gated communities that they don't need to worry about the roads, but I think most of our cities, we need to take care of the majority of our roads. So it's, although there was an increase, as you also point out, the cost of building roads has also gone up, and frankly, that SB1 money is not increasing. That's the same issue that the state is having and the RCTC is having, that is a declining, that sales tax is a declining amount. So just pointing that out. I saw the staff report also pointed out that some cities have passed their own individual tax measures with a portion of that going towards roads. It's fair to point that out, but in all fairness, that's not extra money. That's, in most jurisdictions, I would probably say all of them, still not enough money to repair all of the local roads. So there's not a pot of money, local money in the cities or the county necessarily waiting to go. It could just be transferred over to CVAG. So I'm not a fan of trying to solve our problems with the local share by just shifting the local share from one jurisdiction to another, because there's just not a pot of money that's not being used out there for that. And what I'm worried is we create equity problems, because then wealthier jurisdictions would be able to pay that share, I mean, not easily, but perhaps piece it together easier than other segments. Although, as we've talked about, we all, in one Coachella Valley, we all use each other's roads. So I think that just exacerbates that problem. So it's fair to point out, and I think CBAG should keep monitoring it, but I personally am not a fan for those reasons of looking to that as any type of first resort, because I don't think that would be effective. What you would end up with is you'd have less projects because the jurisdictions wouldn't be able to get anywhere close to coming up with their local share. I think, as the chair said, the best solution, of course, is to look at outside funding where possible. And CBAG, of course, have done a wonderful job of that. I think the TUMP discussion is quite interesting, because basically what that means, since we're not charging enough TUMP, is that the impact of new development is being borne by existing residents and businesses. And so, And a lot of these projects that we're looking at are needing to be done because of growth. So each year that goes by that we don't recover more tump, you know, you're just digging yourself deeper into that hole. So those are my feelings there. Now to RCTC, I'm not speaking for RCTC. I'm here representing Cathedral City, but RCTC is, of course, continuing to look at these funding issues. They have the exact same issues. They have all around the county huge lists of projects, including BC VAG projects. RCTC considers them as a partner in funding these projects too. So, I mean, just the many people were here at the last meeting of RCTC budget implementation just earlier today. You know, they're putting money towards, again, another public output or outreach effort in anticipation of a possible tax measure that is not dead. There are certain jurisdictions, mostly in the Western County, that seem to be quite, I would say reticent, but they actually almost have blinders on to think that somehow we are going to find money for their own projects in Western County without moving forward with this. But I'm not getting the feeling that that's the majority, so I wouldn't give up on RCTC yet. And I will point out, we talked about doing our own local hacks, but last I heard, there were issues, and particularly with the county, because you couldn't split a jurisdiction, and so would the county be part of that or not? There were a lot of questions. There were going to be legislative fixes. I don't know where we are with that. Maybe this isn't the meeting to look at that. I think that CVAG continuing to look at if RCTC doesn't do a countywide measure, would CVAG do a measure? I think that's a good idea. I just don't really think we're to the point of making that decision.
I think we got the legislation passed. And the reason that we bring that up was the polling on support from the Coachella Valley was high. It was high. And I think that's why the Western side said, we need you because you're pulling so good, you know, because you could win it if it's a close one for us. And you know, I'm not sure what's going on.
That's not the question. The question is the technicality of actually being able to do it in this area versus the entire county. And legislation that was passed indicates that we can actually do it. We just got to look that up and see.
Well, I think if you're looking at that, then there needs to be some analysis. That my understanding is the legislation had to do with the cap, and
it was there another cap.
But there may have been other parts of it that because it passed, but then there was no real discussion.
Just as a reminder, and wasn't planning on getting into special legislation, although that is something that can be evaluated. RCTC's cap was increased. In fact, CVAG and RCTC's request. To our former assemblyman, he carried some legislation a year and a half ago. So the cap does allow for a sales tax measure in Riverside County up to a full penny on top of the existing Measure A. My brain's a little foggy on the other matter, and that is, can the Coachella Valley institute its own sales tax measure as a partial county sales tax measure? And the answer at the time was yes, but it requires a little bit of work. I think this group in particular and your predecessors decided going as a whole, Riverside County, is better than going as a part. You look at things like CV Rail. CV Rail is not going to happen with just a Coachella Valley sales tax measure. We really do need countywide participation. And it still be my staff's recommendation that we can do everything we can to have a countywide sales tax measure rather than going it alone. And I know I'm sure Aaron and the RCTC are probably listening now and will be prepared at one of your next meetings to report on their TRP efforts. And I think some polling is going to take place. Maybe the polling will find that the Coachella Valley is no different than some other areas, or maybe it is very different. We'll take a look at those and see where RCTC is going. And I think most here know that it may not need to be RCTC. The private sector, citizens can put together an initiative themselves, and that very well could happen in the future too. So there's, you know, some potential hope out there And we've said this for a couple of years, we're going to hit a cliff, and it's not the 50-50, 75-25. You probably have to consider all of these measures in order for your staff to say, we've got money for the project after Monroe. Right now, we don't.
So there's no question RCTC is wants to go full on education to the region so that people understand the situation that you just described, Tom. There are plenty of projects. So we have to look at it as holistically as possible. And certainly we have to make sure if RCTC is not going to do it, which I believe they are looking at that, then we would have to do it. But RCTC wants to educate, and that's most important. Once people understand that we are approaching that cliff, it certainly creates a sense of urgency. The other thing, and no one wants to increase TUMF. I know that, but when we looked at the 2,310 per single family in 2018, and we say construction costs have gone up 150%, it doesn't make sense that we have the same TUMF as in 2018. No one wants to raise TUMF. I understand that. We want to make sure, or now we're at 2,840. I understand no one wants to raise it. We want to give people in homes. At the same time, we have to be realistic about it. And we have to bear the costs appropriately. So we need to look at all opportunities in this so that we can make sure we have the infrastructure in place. So I believe our goal is to continue looking at this, analyzing issues, and watching closely.
I agree with the member from Palm Desert that we need to look at TUMF. Write it out there, because Western Riverside County has it. It pumps regions. And depending on the regions, right, and it kind of addresses the equity issue. It's like, okay, what area is growing? That's where those dollars are spent. So here's a perfect example. I mean, Hook Street, Monterey, have just exploded. You know, if there was a TUMF region, that like that money would go to that area to support the growth.
Right. We don't even have Monterey or Portola on our plan. And yet with all the significant growth in that Cook area, all the way over to Monterey, looking at Cotino and things like that, those are going to have to be added. So we have to look at it realistically.
Those aren't part of the 8, though.
No, it's not even listed, and we know it's coming.
That's an interesting discussion. I just want to say, if you look at how Western County operates, though, on their projects, I don't know if that's the model that we necessarily want to go to. I think we have a good model of working Valley together, but I'm not trying to discount what you're saying.
No, I mean, the argument is that some areas are going to grow and others are not. And so you get into a free rider problem. And so it's like, okay, we have a project that we need, it's in the West, but if that community only added 20 homes because they don't want to do general plan amendments or they don't want to see growth, why should they be entitled to $40 million, you know, of that revenue? So those are the things that it's like, okay, how do we look at fairness?
That's an interesting argument, because the Valley, the East Valley, is the one that's benefiting from some of the others. So that's where I worry more about when I'm talking equity. I think sometimes the jurisdictions that are still up and coming and that are our future, that we don't want to short shift them
There's ways in which you look at it through, say, Measure A, right? Measure A is it's wide. But if you're looking at TUMF, it's a little bit more prescribed and you know exactly where it's coming from. Anyhow, I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
Further analyze policy.
Yeah, that's it.
And we could take a look at that. I say be careful what you wish for.
Measure A could
also be
generated from one area. Yeah.
Generated in a sub-area of the Coachella Valley. This is, you know, information only. You all know the routine. We're going to obviously track what RCTC is, follow their lead, particularly on the sales tax measure. And we'll come back to you in the next 6-7 months, and that'll let the discussion about the Measure A extension and or addition mature a little bit. And you'll also get the TUMP work is going to be coming in the spring. So
I will,
some hard decisions, maybe some hard political decisions, but they have to be made.
I will throw something out there. And politically, it's not advantageous for me to say this, but there are now sister jurisdictions and tribes who are building gas stations and tribal centers, et cetera, and they're doing well. And the area in which the local sales tax or at least is it getting collected, and that needs to we need to have a conversation about that. Now I certainly believe that every jurisdiction believes that there should be a win-win, and the tribes are partners. But I think that as a region, if we were to discuss that, I think it'd be beneficial there as well to have this regional conversation, saying, okay, how do we ensure that everybody's paying into our system?
It's all fair point. Maybe the next time we do this, we could give a little background on tribal partnerships. And an obvious one is with the Agua Caliente that pay an in lieu TUMP through the cities that they share boundaries with. And we don't have those similar arrangements elsewhere in the Coachella Valley. Maybe that's not common knowledge.
That's true.
So, just information, you don't need to take action on this unless you really want to take a vote on 50-50. You said 50-50.
No, just analysis. Analysis.
And
all right, well, good.
And then let's take, if you wouldn't mind, the election of officers, and then we have a presentation after that.
Yeah, let's move on to item number G. This is the election of the Transportation Committee officer. I'm going to move to nominate the vice chair. For the position of the chair.
I will say that. Thank you.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure. I've done this for 3 years now. So.
Yeah. Well, can we take this all in one vote? And I would nominate Kathleen Fitzpatrick for vice chair. Second.
All right. So we got a motion for the chair and the vice chair. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Any no's? Joey?
He left.
All right. And then we got another presentation.
Yeah, congratulations. And I think you finished this meeting as chair and look forward to working with you again, chair.
Thank you.
Have find us the money.
And hopefully this is a presentation. If you do have to leave, you can, but I think you're going to find this fascinating on how CB Sync could be so effective on saving lives with your emergency services personnel.
So, 70.
Good morning, committee, honorable chair and new honorable chair. Chris Gunterson, CV Sync Program Manager, but I'm also wearing another hat today, and that is the TISMO Committee Chair. I was voluntold several years ago by the City of La Quinta that I would be the chair of the TISMO Committee, and so I have never been able to take that hat off yet, so we'll continue on. The Transportation Systems Management and Operations. So when CV Sync was originally conceived, we needed to select equipment. And so all of the cities came together to review. And at that time, it was an exhaustive because of the amount of equipment, the amount of software that we had to review. Well, everybody's probably updated their phone within the last 2 to 3 years because technology has advanced. And so we have to do the same thing as the program moves forward. We have to look at new equipment. Equipment that will help us to analyze corridors faster and easier so that we can make adjustments in the system. And as we meet infrequently, but when we do come together and work within a committee to listen to presentations. The last presentation that we did was on new and emerging technology. So we did a technology assessment, and the turnout was fantastic from all the cities. We had every city represented. We had Riverside County. We had Caltrans. So it was an impressive meeting. And within that meeting, we were able to look at all the different equipment. Now, we just didn't invite anybody. There was a questionnaire that was filled out ahead of time to make sure that the equipment being presented was compatible with our current system. What does compatible mean? Open architecture. This happens to be one of the controllers that we use on the project. Well, all of those cameras and radios or softwares have to be able to communicate with that controller in an open architecture in a digital environment. And so it's very important that that happens before we even move forward. So we had, I think that day we had 16 companies present. And out of those, we asked if any of the cities wanted to participate in a pilot. What is a pilot? Basically, we install the equipment or the system in a city and we operate it. Well, we've had more since this presentation in the last week since I created the presentation, but we're going to talk about the two projects that were, they raised their hands and we want to try it. And Indio did a virtual roadside unit. I'm going to jump back a couple slides. This is a physical roadside unit. It's five radios in one that talks to cars. It talks to everything. A virtual roadside unit is done basically digitally within a cell phone with different types of technology that are installed on the vehicles. And what's nice is the project that's in Indio, we have a laptop that's a fire truck, or not, it's actually a tablet, and we have a tablet that's a Sunbus. And we can put them in the vehicle, and that vehicle becomes a fire truck or a Sunbus. Now, don't get worried. We're not doing anything crazy. But it was for proof of concept. And so we're, because of the phase two integration and our move to Thousand Palms, we're kind of in a pause mode because the network is kind of being restructured and moved around. But once that is all said and done, we'll be able to demonstrate this pilot in the city of Indio. And in initial concept was very, very good, that we were reducing times by up to 60%, which is fantastic. I don't have any hard data for that yet, but I will. The next pilot is a new concept. Chris, it's called Travel Safely.
Yeah. Just briefly explain. So the idea is you have this unit, or it's a phone in an emergency vehicle, and the phone knows where you're going. So instead of triggering the signal with your little fancy emergency device, the system knows where you're traveling and routes you and hits green along the way. You can imagine that would save a whole lot of time on one of these emergency vehicles, right?
Good, perfect example. Thank you for bringing that up, Tom. Perfect example would be your engine is, they're doing their grocery shopping. Okay, well, the emergency preemption is not geared at the grocery store. So if they get a call, that's logged into the system. The system will automatically prep everything en route. It's an amazing tool.
It's pretty neat. It's not a movie.
She wants one for her car.
Is that for emergency calls only, or is it distinguished?
Emergency calls only. Now, the Sunbus, just to give you a quick differentiator, Sunbus is transit signal priority. Let me explain the difference. Signal's operating. Fire truck comes. It will interrupt what's happening at that intersection to give the priority to the fire truck. Transit signal priority, if the Sunbus is approaching an intersection and it may not have enough time to get through the intersection, it will extend it, but it's not going to interrupt anything. The next pilot we're doing is in two cities, Cathedral City and City of Palm Springs. This is kind of a unique concept. So those roadside units communicate to the cars with an onboard unit. So you have a roadside unit, onboard unit. Those onboard units can be very expensive. I know the one that we put on the Tesla for testing is upwards of $7,000. So not everybody wants to run out and put $7,000 into their car just to have connection. You can download the Travel Safely app onto your phone, and now this becomes an onboard unit. So this is a fantastic way to introduce connected vehicle to the public. So what we're doing is we're installing at six locations, in three at each city, and we will begin testing it when it's ready with city staff and CVAG staff. And then as things improve, or we start getting more and more data, we may expand that test bed. One of the unique things about this particular project is it brought together a lot of different personalities. There is actually two cities, two different maintenance companies, CV Sync staff, and I think we actually had somebody from Indio there as well. So it was there. We met out there in the field to see what was going to be installed, how it was going to look inside the cabinet. We wanted to make sure that the maintenance staff knew what to look for if they had a problem, who to call. So a lot of coordination with this. It was very interesting watching this take place. Several of these people out here had no idea that this technology existed. So now that they know it exists, they're like, I think I better go back to school and learn more. So CV Sync eventually will become an educational platform to teach everybody, because we are on the cutting edge. We are the tip of the spear when it comes to highway transportation and technology.
So you're saying if you have the app on your phone and you're driving and you're near an intersection that CV Sync knows an emergency vehicle is approaching, it will give you an alert?
Thank you. Let me explain that. I didn't explain that very well. So I have my phone, I have my app, I have it up on my windshield holder because we're not allowed to hold it in our hand anymore. It does nothing visually. So if you're sitting at an intersection, your phone's going to say, get ready for green. That means the green light's coming up soon. If there's a pedestrian crossing in one of those flashing crosswalks, that's not really a controlled signal. That's just a warning device. It will say pedestrian and crosswalk ahead. If you have a fire truck approaching, it'll say emergency vehicle approaching.
It's audio?
It's all audible. It doesn't take your eyes off the road. So The nice thing is I can put this on my bicycle too. I can put it in my pocket and you can have it on whenever, wherever you're at. And those audible signals will come to you wherever you're at. And it will know whether you're riding a bike, you're in a car, or walking on the sidewalk. It's a very, very cool piece of technology. Of course, you want to make sure it works and flush it out. And, you know, it sounds great, but does it really work? So we want to make sure that that's what the pilot is for. So as those results come forward, we'll share those with you. We are working on the pilots right now as we speak. In fact, my son works for one of the companies that he's the field technician, so he's the one installing them. So he's getting extra scrutiny right now. But we'll be testing those here very, very shortly. And with that, I think I've answered questions, but if there's any more questions.
Just a comment. I think democratizing that information and then getting it to the folks that need it is something we need to think about. Like, I'm just thinking like UPS drivers, Amazon folks that are on the road every single day, our school buses, you know, like I think it just, how do we figure that out?
Yeah. So the interesting thing is all cars right now have onboard technology. It's just not turned on. They're waiting for certain things to happen within the government for that to take place. The experience you experience in Coachella Valley, is that going to be the same in Anaheim as it is in Riverside? Things like that. But this is an excellent way to introduce the technology to the public, similar to the way we did satellite radio.
What is the app called again?
Glance. Travel Safely.
Glance
is the software. Travel Safely is the app. And Travel Safely, I think if you're trying to find the app, is all one word.
All right. Well, pretty good meeting, and move now on to, well, that was just an information item, and public comments on non-agenda items. Any?
Before you end after that, I just have to comment.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. We were at Riverside County Transportation a couple of weeks ago at the general meeting, and they were talking about maintenance on the 215. So it just made me think, because I keep pushing for the maintenance on our stretch here out I-10. Traveled to Arizona recently, and that stretch from Arid Blythe to Indio is coming to a close finally after many, many years. But it was interesting to listen to the 215 maintenance. They started this project, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, in sections, because you can only do section. And our region, Riverside County, they get between $300 and $400 million a year for maintenance projects, which is not a lot of money. They're going into the last phase of this, which is going to end sometime in 26, 27. And they're going to keep pushing for more maintenance in the Western region. So I think it's time that we sit down, maybe at the transportation committee and even at the executive level, sign some letters stating that we really want our corridor to be seriously taken into consideration. If you drive from Whitewater area, 111 area through Monterey, it's dangerous if you're in the first two lanes. And the truck traffic obviously isn't getting smaller or less. We've got multiple warehouses that are going to be planned over the next 10 years. Will it bring more truck traffic here? I'm not sure if that's true, but it'll at least have a lot more truck traffic slowing down in our region and getting off onto our regional road. So it was something I thought about. And then the last comment is I was, thank God, late the day that the truck came across and shut down the freeway. Mm-hmm. It was 2 minutes behind that. And I stopped just past 8 Palm. CHP, Pedo City Police Department, Riverside County Sheriff's did a fantastic job in rerouting traffic. For the first time in my life, I was able to go on the opposite side of the freeway, the opposite way, back to Day Palm to get off as CHP rerouted us. But I had about an hour to some freeway stopped. And I was in the fast lane, was that the number one lane? Is that what they call it? Number one or number four? I always mix those up. And I was able to watch multiple emergency vehicles pass me, and they could only do about 5 or 6 miles an hour, maybe a little faster. But because of no one, they do maintain. But the debris that was left on the roadways from the truck traffic, rocks. I mean, you don't realize it when you're driving 80 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour along the freeway. These rocks are huge. And the tires from the trucks that get pushed off into the roadway, it's crazy. The emergency vehicles could not get to an accident in a timely fashion because of the maintenance that's not done on our stretch of the freeway. And I've said this multiple times, we're a resort destination. I've traveled to a resort destination in another state, and it was beautiful. Roadways were clean. I traveled 3 or 4 months ago to another area. The roadways were clean in another state. I just don't understand what we're doing here. But I do think we need to put some pressure on Caltrans.
I'm well made.
Yeah.
All right. We'll get a letter.
In addition to a letter, if it's okay with the committee, I'm sure it is, we'll invite Caltrans to give an update on I-10. The mayor's correct. Now we're going to have a beautiful and modern section of I-10 all the way to Blythe. We have a pretty good looking I-10 to the west in the pass. Now we have this gap that is just an absolute mess, and it's an obvious mess. So perhaps we get an update from Caltrans and how far they're able to push that money that they originally allocated.
All right, so there are no public comments. Okay, we'll move on to announcements. Next meeting of the Transportation Committee will be Monday, November 3rd, and the next meeting of the Executive Committee will be Monday, September 20th. With that, we are adjourned.